So we are in Revelation chapter 12 in our studies. I really appreciated last week the assistance of Lee and Christy and Rob as we pre-recorded our session. Now, the advantage of that was that you could hear all the questions you watched the whole video and their interaction with me. I thought it went very well. I really did appreciate it. But we aren't going to do that every week. We're going to be live as much as possible. So we've talked about getting mics suspended from the ceiling to pick up more of the questions, and then when in the hymn service to do the pick up the singing, but it's just one more thing to do, and haven't got around to doing that yet. Another thing I forgot to do this morning, as Lena was coming down the hallway, I realized I didn't welcome Lena to our services. That's because she is such a regular that we're almost have adopted her. So we're glad that she's here with us too. All right, so Revelation chapter 12. So just at the beginning, we have the outline so far, and I have. I didn't mean to do it that way. Okay, so this week we have chapter 12, which I didn't put the numbers there. I'll have to fix that for next week. But I'm calling this chapter The Long War Against God. And this comes actually from a book by Henry Morris by that title. I just stole his title for my title for Revelation 12. And I also stole the outline from Constable, as you'll note in the footnotes. All right, so there's a couple of things to begin with that we just want to cover. At the end of chapter 11, we hear the seventh trumpet sound, but as with the seventh seal in chapter 8 and verse 1 following, there is a pause in heaven as other material is discussed and the progression of judgment is set aside. So then chapter 12 forms a parenthesis, describing primarily the activity of Satan in the final stages of his long war with God. This revelation helps us understand what is going on behind the scenes as the progression of judgment unfolds. And one more note, one feature of Revelation 12 through 15 is the introduction of seven personages, Walvoord calls them, involved in the unfolding of the final stages of the book. We have four of them in chapter 12, and we'll go through that in just a moment. All right, so let's go ahead and read the first six verses, and then we'll start talking about what these things mean. A great sign appeared in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun and the moon under her feet, and on her head a crown of 12 stars. And she was with child, and she cried out, being in labor and in pain to give birth. Then another sign appeared in heaven, and behold, a great red dragon having seven heads and 10 horns, and on his heads were 7 diadems. And his tail swept away a third of the stars of heaven and threw them to the earth. And the dragon stood before the woman who was about to give birth, so that when she gave birth, he might devour her child. She gave birth to a son, a male child, who is to rule all the nations with a rod of iron, and her child was caught up to God and to his throne. Then the woman fled into the wilderness, where she had had a place prepared by God so that there she would be nourished for 1,260 days. Now you read through all of that, and it's obviously symbolical language. We're going to use, for example, the great red dragon figure. That obviously is identified as a personality. But the image of a dragon is symbolical. There aren't dragons as such, but the image speaks of something. So when we're talking about literal interpretation, we will take a literal meaning of what a great red dragon would be, fearsome, dangerous, and so forth, and we will apply it to the person who we identify as being the great red dragon. So that's just one thing to note as we're talking about interpreting literally. That doesn't mean that there aren't symbols, and the symbols do mean something, but the literal meaning of the symbol informs us about what the symbol means. I hope that makes sense. Anyhow, so first thing we're going to talk about is the dragon's hostility to the man-child. We have the chapter beginning with a sign in heaven. And the sign in heaven is this woman who is in labor. She's called a great sign, something that signifies something else. So this woman herself is representative of something. So that tells us it's not a literal individual in this case. This woman represents something. All right. And I have in the notes there, this is the first of a series of signs, and I have the references to the other signs in the book of Revelation that follow. All right. And then in identifying who this woman is, there have been several suggestions. Obviously, with symbolical language, it is difficult to come to a conclusion. In this particular case, there are some things in the text, not in verses 1 and 2, but later on, that sort of give us some indication, I think, of who this woman is. But here are some suggestions that have been made. In the pagan mythology and world that the book of Revelation was written, the Romans had a figure on some of their coins who was called the Mother of God. And this connects with pagan goddess worship and Ishtar worship, which is Eastern. That's not Roman, but it's things that would be adopted into the sort of the Roman pantheon. The things, all of these ideas are swirling around in that era, in those people. But there's also, even amongst Roman mythology and so forth, the exaltation of feminine goddess figures and so forth. So some people said, well, this is just some kind of a Roman symbol. All right. And then others, quite going a different way, they will identify the woman as the church, the believing covenant community. That's one suggestion. And then another more plausible, perhaps, suggestion is Mary, the mother of Christ. And some will identify this as Mary here. However, instead, the way we're taking this, or the way I'm taking it, this woman is a sign of the nation Israel. And I've got some reasons for identifying her as Israel. First of all, the woman is the object of persecution during the tribulation. If you look down a little bit further in the chapter, verses 13 and verse 17, you'll see the Satan in this guise after this woman, is attacking this woman, and it appears quite clearly that can't be Mary, it can't be the Mother of God, this pagan figure, and it certainly isn't the church, because the church isn't involved in this period of history. And then we have Old Testament imagery that speaks of of a woman in labor. So Isaiah 54 and several other passages in the Old Testament, they seem to connect this with Israel. Then the fact that she wears a crown with 12 stars, she is clothed with the sun, she stands on the moon. Now all of that it's kind of a bizarre picture if you think about it, but all of those things seem to they have some historical references in the Old Testament, and here specifically it's Joseph's dream back in Genesis 37. Remember, Joseph is famous for being a dreamer, and he saw certain things in his dream. The sun was his father Jacob, the moon was his mother Rachel, the 12 stars were his brothers, the 12 patriarchs. And so that connection again identifies her in our minds with Israel. There's a connection with that previous vision by Joseph. And then finally, prophetic references to Israel as the travailing women, as the travailing woman, are added in. That might be the similar, I guess, to point B. So I've got all those things. You can look up all those references later if you wish. But I'm going to stop here because I see Lee was trying to get his hand up and ask a question. Right. Yes. Yeah. Well, if you bring in that dream from Jacob or Joseph, it does seem to link all of those figures with that identification. And again, what we're dealing with here, there are some things in here that, you know, in a way, our identification even as Israel is somewhat tentative. However, if you look down to verse 6 where it says, the woman fled into the wilderness where she had a place prepared by God so that there she would be nourished for 1,260 days. Quite clearly, whatever this woman represents, she is in existence in the last half of the tribulation period. So that number number eliminates some of the other suggestions. Like the idea that this is somehow a pagan symbol, like that can't be right. That doesn't fit in with the rest of the passage. Right. That's right, yes. Yeah. Yeah, she is clearly somebody who is under attack from Satan. All right. Any other questions or comments at this point? Yes. Okay, well, because of the relationship to the man-child, the church is brought about by the man-child, but she is giving birth to the man-child. And so this is a different picture. And I think that's an inadequate representation of who the woman is. Now, we have to recognize it is a very symbolical chapter. It's we have to be careful, but if you're tying in, sometimes you can tie, as I said, other scriptures together, and even in the context that seem to indicate something about the direction of how we should understand her. All right, Lee, you want to go ahead with that? Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. And the signs also have to be tied together in interpreting who they are, because they're interacting. We need to tie these things together in this chapter so that they make a comprehensive sense. And so that does eliminate certain interpretations. All right. Now, let's see. The birth pangs represent the struggles of Israel as a nation leading up to the coming of Christ. Since the woman represents Israel, not Mary, these birth pangs need not refer to the first coming, more below. The travails of Israel during the tribulation could fulfill the image, thus pointing to the second coming. So this part of my notes, this is a little bit more tentative, I would say. And we'll come back to the birth pangs and who the child is when we identify the child. So let's hold off on that section of the notes. I've just run through them just for your information. But as I read them, I think I maybe should have left that until later in the notes. All right, so let's talk about the second sign, the great red dragon. Okay, in heaven, the image of a dragon is a powerful, aggressive, and deadly enemy. This image symbolizes Satan. And verse 9 identifies him specifically as Satan. So with the great red dragon, we have no qualms at all about who the dragon represents in the chapter. I should have my whole text open if I'm going to talk about other verses in the chapter. But if you look down there to verse 9, it says quite clearly the dragon is Satan. And I'll get there in just a second. Okay, verse 9, and the great dragon was thrown down, the serpent of old, who is called the devil and Satan. So that's very clear who the dragon is, as I can say. And then, but he has this image, all right, so there's all these symbols that are, he has 7 heads and 10 horns, all right, so, and this shows his power behind the world empire of the last days. And we reference chapter 17 and verse 12, and also Daniel chapter 7. And remember that there is this image of the multi-headed beast in Daniel chapter 7. And they are represented as kings. And then 3 of those kings are perish, and one emerges to dominate over them. This is the Antichrist. All right? So collectively, these kings represent sort of the council of nations that rule the world during the tribulation, according to the scriptures, in various other passages. I have the next note says the ten horns refer to ten kings ruling simultaneously with the Antichrist. And we have some, again, a reference to Daniel chapter 7 and then chapter 13 and verse 1, the beast that comes out of the sea. That's the Antichrist. The stars, the stars probably represent, notice in verse 4, his tail swept away a third of the stars of heaven, probably represent the angels who rebelled with Satan. All right, and I'll give you several references on this. They are cast out of heaven, but have some access to God at the present time. Now, this is a little bit, this part is a little bit tenuous as well, a little bit controversial. This third of the stars that the dragon takes with him out of heaven. He swept away a third of the stars of heaven and threw them to the earth. Now, this, some say, well, this is just some kind, another fantastic judgment, as we've seen elsewhere in the book of Revelation. So maybe some huge meteor shower that causes some judgment on the earth. That's possible. But often the image of stars in the scripture does refer to angels. There's a connection with the dragon here. And the dragon himself is going to be expelled from heaven in this passage. And so it seems that this represents the fallen angels who apparently, like Satan, have some kind of access to heaven. Now, we look at this and we almost can't believe it, but we look back to the book of Job, where Satan does have some kind of access and some kind of audience with God. He comes and talks to God about Job. And so it's if Satan has that kind of access, then apparently it's possible for fallen angels likewise to have similar access. All right, Lee? That's right. He hasn't been thrown into hell, and so there is something about this image. And again, there's lots of questions here. You say, okay, I don't get this. Well, I know. I'm giving you a bear trying to understand it. But it is, and as we go through this chapter, a little bit more will come in that will help us to make it more clear. But it is, we're trying to, as best we can, to understand what we can without going too far into the weeds of speculation. All right, Rob?
Well, exactly. Like you always say, it's important not to assign too much to some of these things because the seven heads and ten horns represent nations, and we're pretty clear about that. But people for decades have been assigning countries.
Oh, yes. I remember the European Common Market for years. They said, oh, this is the ten-headed empire, and that was back when the EU had, I think, nine countries. Just wait till the tenth one comes, and then that's it, that's curtains. Well, now there's like 20 or 30 or whatever it is, so can't be that, right?
But even Jack Van Empey, of course, went so far beyond that, he was still insisting.
Yeah.
Right. So we've got to be cautious.
Have to be very cautious, and I do think Bob brings up Jack Van Empey, who was a good man. But he did on prophecy. He really went nuts. He was, as the older he got, the more bizarre his interpretations became. I just have to say. Anyhow, so that's the caution. We want to, you know, I don't identify a lot of these things in the book of Revelation. I tend to say, okay, let's just deal with what we can know from the text. In this chapter, I am identifying a few things, a little bit maybe more than normal, but it's because there are things in the very chapter itself which do lend some distinctive marks that we can sort of come to an interpretation.
As you talk about the European Common Market, that was 40 years ago, right?
So that's right.
We're always trying to put it into like today's terms.
That's right, yeah.
We're also talking about.
Yeah.
And it could be, you know.
That's right. I know, and
it is any time.
It's sort of like the expected arrival of Meher Shel El Hashbaz here. He's any second now, right? So you're okay so far, Sydney? Okay, yeah, nothing, all good? Okay, very good. All right, yeah, that's right. All right, so anyway, let's move on here. Okay, so the dragon Let's see, we're in number five. The dragon took vengeance by attempting to thwart the birth of the woman's child. Again, the timing of the birth is unclear. So the stars of heaven are swept away from the stars are swept out of the heavens. They're thrown to the earth. If we're correct that this is the angels being cast out of heaven, including Satan, then the next thing, the dragon stood before the woman who was about to give birth so that when she gave birth, he might devour the child. So he's antagonistic towards the child, and it appears in response to the expulsion of the angels from heaven. That appears to be the sequence here. All right? But still, we're not entirely clear about everything this means. So now down to verse 5 and 6, we have the third person, the son, the male child. And we have the flight of the woman in this. Now the male child is clearly the Messiah. Right? She gave birth to a son, a male child, who is to rule all the nations with a rod of iron. Well, this is the Messiah. There's no doubt about it. When we identify the male child, this is the Messiah. All right, so no problem. The male child is caught up to God and to his throne. Now, this appears to be a reference to his ascension 2,000 years ago. Right? So Satan is unable to attack him. Now, so Satan turns his attention to the nation, but the woman flees. All right? So then the woman fled into the wilderness where she had a place prepared by God. And this flight is mentioned elsewhere in Scripture. There's a couple other references you can look up later. And there's also this mention again of the 1260 days. So here's where there's a certain amount of confusion. When is this child, when is the birth of the child? And I see Walvoord and Ryrie and Constable, who are all sort of colleagues, people with a similar point of view, but they, all of them have slightly different interpretations at this point. So when is it says she's in labor and pain to give birth? Well, when is this birth? Is it the birth of Christ in his first coming, or is it just simply referring to the fact that Israel is from whom Christ comes, and the labor and pain is the suffering of the tribulation? It's just not clear, and there's a lot of confusion on this point, and Christy wants to either enlighten us or add to it. Yeah. That's right. That's right. That's right. Yes. Yes, this is quite confusing. All right. Now, here are the things that we know for certain. We know who the dragon is. We know who the male child is. Those two points, we can hang our hat on those. We also know that the period in view, for the most part, is the latter part of the tribulation. That's what the 1260 days is. All right, so then, knowing those things, we have to fit this all together as to who this is and when it happens. It's quite clear that during the tribulation, Satan will oppose Israel. The Antichrist will oppose Israel. We have the idea of him breaking the covenant in the middle of the week. The 1260 days has a reference to the second half of the tribulation, after the covenant has been broken, after the Jews are now becoming the targets of the Antichrist instead of his allies. And so we would seem to indicate that all of this is connected to the tribulation period primarily. And so then when we try to identify when the birth happened, is this really a reference to the ascension? It seems to be, because the male child isn't on the scene at this moment. Okay? So there's a little bit of confusion here. We have to acknowledge that. And I'm just piecing it together as best I can with limited resources. All right, Lee. Right.
So it kind of identifies the mother as potentially Israel.
Yes.
And once Satan was unsuccessful with the child, he did turn, like you mentioned here, like
yes.
he turned to the nation.
That's
Israel.
Right. Yeah. That's right. Satan has been attacking Israel for centuries. That's
right.
True.
And if you look at all the arrows of all the countries around them, that they've all been pointed at Israel.
That's right. Yeah. Yes, but we have the 1260 days.
Sure, but that is also like even Israel is likely to be the one that ushers in the Antichrist because they're going to be in agreement, some kind of
that's right.
binding agreement where there's peace for a period of time, and then at the second half,
yes.
where there would be 1260 days left, that's
yeah.
where
that's correct. It is. We have to admit. Okay, there are these things we can hang our hats on.
Sure.
There are certain things. Okay, we know this. There's about four facts in here, and then the rest of it we're trying to fit together in a way that makes sense. Okay, so Maureen is trying to get her hand up. Okay, go ahead, Daryl. Okay. Yes. Yeah. Right. He's not ruling at that point. That's right. Yeah. That's right. Okay, Maureen? Yes. Yeah. Yes.
And for sure Satan tried to destroy him.
Yes.
Right? And then it's like, okay, this was that moment, but then here we are right now, later on, so that we know what the images are. Right?
Yes. Well, it's possible that it is a reference back to events long before, but then now at the final stages of things, there is a turning of Satan against the people of the Messiah. Okay, so it is a challenging... It's certainly a challenging passage. I think we have to agree with that. It's very hard to identify everything in here, and it has that sense of a very bad dream. I had one last night, and somehow Jamie Mueller was in the dream. I don't know how that. and my house was collapsing around me. It was full of dry rot. I don't know how that all fits together. All right, Rob.
Well, part of this, I think.
Yes, yes.
So this is, I think, part of it where, you know, he's trying to wipe out the Jews one way or another.
Yes.
Before they come to Christ.
Yeah. I think all of that's true. But let us move on to the next section, because we still got more symbols here and we're not halfway through. Okay, and there was war in heaven, Michael and his angels waging war with the dragon. The dragon and his angels waged war, and they were not strong enough, and there was no longer a place found for them in heaven. So that's what ties in with the third of the angels or stars being swept out of heaven. They think this shows that this is what it's talking about. The great dragon was thrown down, the serpent of old, who is called the devil and Satan, who deceives the whole world. He was thrown down to the earth, and his angels were thrown down with him. So this, the final expulsion of Satan from heaven, Michael leads the angels in battle with the dragon. Michael is the prince of Israel, the angel assigned to the nation of Israel. That's referred to in Daniel in a couple of places. The dragon seems to be some sort of equivalency of rank with Michael in terms of the ranks of angels. The dragon's forces are weaker than Michael's forces, and they are driven out of heaven. Now, all of this does seem, you know, you read that and you say, no, can't God just do this with the force, because God is almighty? But God chooses, in this case, to employ Michael and his angels against the dragon on this occasion, whatever this represents. All right, the dragon is identified here as Satan, and is seen here as thrown down to earth. And again, we have this note: at the present time, Satan has some access to heaven where he accuses God's people. In the future, his access to heaven will be denied as described in this passage. So when we talk about the fall of Satan, we think about something that happened in the past. But when Satan fell and the demons that went with him, it doesn't mean that he was excluded out of heaven at that point in time. This Bible is quite clear, there is still some kind of access for Satan in heaven at this time. Yes, Daryl.
The idea of having access, like in Job it says, there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord.
Yes.
Satan also came among them. Now, when I was in the Navy and I presented myself to the captain, it was at his pleasure.
Right.
To think in terms of having access to the captain.
Right. Yes, that's right. That's right, yes. Well, that's a good point. That's right. And so there is, perhaps God calls him forth for some kind of a accountability session. All right? what are the terms? There's naval terms for getting called before the captain, isn't there? I forget what they are. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah,
that's right. What are you doing? Yeah. All right. Christy. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. I think that's true. I think we, but anyway, there are certain things. I mean, you know, you say, man, Lord, could you have just given us a little bit more explanation here? Because this does, is so intriguing, but he didn't. So, all right. So let's go ahead and read the next section. This part is quite simple. It's basically a hymn or a celebration in heaven. Then I heard a loud voice in heaven saying, now the salvation and the power and the kingdom of our God and the authority of his Christ have come, for the accuser of our brethren has been thrown down. He accuses them before our God day and night. And they overcame him because of the blood of the Lamb and because of the word of their testimony. And they did not love their life even when faced with death. For this reason, rejoice, O heavens, and you who dwell in them. Woe to the earth and the sea, because the devil has come down to you, having great wrath, knowing that he has only a short time. So a few quick points, and then I think we'll move on to the last section. The accuser of the brethren has been cast down. The brethren are celebrated as having already overcome the accuser. And I note here, probably proleptic. Remember, that means it's written as if it's past, but it's actually a prophecy of something to come, viewing the coming martyrdom of tribulation saints as already having won the victory. All right, that's verse 11. And then those in heaven rejoice because Satan is finally cast out. But woe to the earth because Satan now knows his time is short. So we're in the very last part of the tribulation, and his wrath is going to increase. But let's not dwell on this section, because we want to finish our chapter. So let's read verse 13 through 17. And when the dragon saw that he was thrown down to the earth, he persecuted the woman who gave birth to the male child. But the two wings of the great eagle were given to the woman so that she could fly into the wilderness to her place where she was nourished for a time and times and half a time from the presence of the serpent. The serpent poured water like a river out of his mouth after the woman, so that he might cause her to be swept away with the flood. But the earth helped the woman, and the earth opened its mouth and drank up the river which the wet dragon poured out of his mouth. So the dragon was enraged with the woman and went off to make war with the rest of her children who keep the commandments of God and hold to the testimony of Jesus. So there are things in here that we'll say, okay, I've got it now. I've got these symbols. I understand what they mean. And yeah, I can make sense of this. And then he throws a little curveball at you and brings in another detail that says, wait a minute, I thought that doesn't quite fit with what I just thought. And so that's one of the challenges of this particular passage. All right. But the point is, the vengeance of the dragon against the woman is now very fierce. He knows his time is short. This is a repetition of what we have in verse 6, but now we understand the fierceness of this period of wrath. This is the great tribulation. This is, and he, it's as if that at this point Satan is cast out of heaven. It's the same point, if you think about the point in the tribulation, where the Antichrist breaks his covenant with Israel. And he is now he now is persecuting Israel instead of using Israel as an ally. And so it seems that this is animated by the dragon, by Satan. And this change is all part of that change of attitude. Now, the Lord enables many Jews to escape the wrath of the dragon, protecting them, again, for a time, times, and half a time. This is another reference to the last half of the tribulation. Satan makes one final attempt to destroy the fleeing Jews with a flood. Now, the flood. Okay, so what is this all about? Many prophecy teachers will show you at this point a picture of Petra in Jordan and this hole in the rock where there is an ancient city. And they suggest that maybe Israel will flee there, and then a literal flood of water will be sent after them by Satan to drown them in their hole, and the earth opens up and swallows up the water and protects them. Well, there's nothing in the text that tells us where they flee to, whether it's Petra or some other place. The geography of that land doesn't necessarily lend itself to a great flood working very well. So is this literal water, or is this some other kind of just a representation of a mighty force that flows after the people of Israel somehow? We don't know. There's something. It is clearly meant to be negative. It is clearly meant to be something that could destroy them. But the earth somehow helps a woman and prevents Satan from achieving his task or his goal. All right? So the dragon then will turn his attention on the Jews that remain, the rest of her children. All right. So who is he talking about here? Obviously, it would seem that there are some Israelites who are outside the protection of the hiding place. There is a passage in Zechariah 13, verse 8, that refers to one-third of Israel escaping the attack from Satan. Now, the passage, if you go and look it up, you can look it up this afternoon, you'll see that statement, two-thirds are destroyed, one-third is preserved, but it's really, you know, obscure prophetic language, and it's hard to really make much sense out of this. But at least some of those outside the hiding place are under attack. And also, it appears that some of these at least are believers. We saw the 144,000 mentioned in Revelation chapter 7, I think it was. So are they a part of this number who are going to be under the attack of Satan? All right, we don't know. Are the Jews who have escaped into the wilderness, are they believers at this point? I don't think so. I think that they will, when the Lord returns, they will see him for who he is, and they will repent at that point. But at this point, they are simply now being opposed by the Antichrist and by the serpent, by the Satan, and so they have fled and they are in hiding, and God is protecting them through miraculous means, which we don't completely understand in terms of the symbolism that we're given here in Revelation 12. All right, Rob.
Yeah, I think that's an argument myself. I think that's an argument against Petra being the place, because this is more of supernatural.
That's right, yes.
And, yeah. Also, I looked it up one time, and Petra only houses, I forget if it was 50,000 people or 10,000 or something. And if we're talking about, you know, million, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, it would seem very difficult. I've always thought that when I've heard preachers talk about Petra, I mean, it's a very interesting place. If you've ever seen the pictures of it, or have you ever been there, Robert? So it's a fascinating location, but.
I think it's a romantic idea.
Oh, it's very romantic, yes. Yeah, that's right. Okay. Yeah.
Quick question about Petra. Do you mean like the temple, the one in Jordan?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes, that's what we're talking about, yes. Yeah, you've probably seen pictures. Of it. And I'd love to actually visit, because I think it would be fascinating to see that ancient place. But it's I just can't buy that.
It was an ancient place for some reason.
It was a hiding place for certain people in the past, yes. But we're talking now, when we're talking now in the 21st century with smart bombs and when, you know, the kind of weaponry that people have today, it seems really hard to picture this as a very effective hiding place. But whatever the scriptures are talking about here, the woman, Israel, will flee. Satan will pursue. The earth, obviously through supernatural means, will help and will prevent the attack, whatever it is. And the serpent will then turn and go off and make war with others. So that much we know, but exactly some of these specifics, we have to be really careful. And when you see the prophetic teachers giving us, okay, it's got to be this place and it's got to be this method, and well, you know, let's not be too specific on these things. All right? Any last questions or comments? Okay, well, let's have a word of prayer and we'll close for today. Our Father, we thank you for this time and a very fascinating chapter, which we don't completely understand, but we do trust that in our what we do understand, that you are showing that all things are in your hands and that we can trust you and rely on you for everything. In Jesus' name, amen.